It's Celtics coverage on CLNSRadio.com.
Sensational move from Kyrie Irving.
Oh,
Hayward. That's what I'm talking about. Horford lays it up and in.
Dial in right now and share your thoughts toll free 347-215-7771.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the CLNS Celtics postgame show. I'm your host, Taylor McLeod, joined alongside by Joe Choquette, and we will be here for the next hour breaking down all the action, taking calls from you guys. Celtics went to Indianapolis tonight, lost 102-101. Close game throughout. If you look at the stats there aren't too many discrepancies. It's a pretty evenly matched game. What it came down to is that last minute of basketball is whoever's going to make the last play is going to win. And the Patriots made two plays. Kyrie had one hell of a fourth quarter. Hit three threes down the stretch, two of them which were daggers, you know, in his right-handed corner, off balance, in the standard Kyrie Irving fourth quarter three-pointer. Knocked a couple of them down, and I thought that was going to be enough. But came down to the last minute. Kyrie got the ball down low on the left block, missed a layup, which hurt a lot. Oladipo comes down, nails a three to put the Pacers up 102-101, left 3.4 seconds on the clock. You know, President Brad Stevens, the ATO is his thing after timeout play. And I thought for sure the Celtics would get a good look at the basket. They ran one of their standard, you know, over the top plays that Al Horford normally gets. Gordon Hayward tried to go over the top to Jason Tatum. It got intercepted. Pacers ran out the clock. Celtics lose 102-101. You know, I was talking to my co-host Joe, you know, just in the screening room before this, and in games like this, these close losses, there's no one thing to pinpoint, you know, why the Celtics lost. And like I said, if you look at the stats, they're pretty even throughout. I mean, similar field goal percentage, similar three-point percentage, similar rebounds, similar assists, you know, similar steals, similar blocks. Everything was pretty uniform in that shows in the score, 102-101, only a one-point margin. So really, like I said, you know, just a couple minutes ago, it came down to whoever was going to make the last play. And the Pacers made the last play, pulled out a win, and, you know, they continue to prove themselves in the Eastern Conference. Last year, they made the playoffs and made some noise in the first round before LeBron knocked them out in seven. Here, they look to be one of the better four or five teams in the Eastern Conference behind the Bostons and the Phillies and the Milwaukees and the Torontos of the world. Where they fit into that, obviously, the season is young, so we don't quite know yet, but you're looking at a good Eastern Conference team, a pair of good Eastern Conference teams, and one of them just made more plays when it counted tonight. Celtics played well down the stretch. Pacers played well down the stretch. They just made more plays when it counted. Joe, what did you think was the main reason for the Celtics losing in Indy tonight?
I think it really, you know, to your point, it came down to I don't think either team was fighting each other. They were both fighting the clock. You know, I hope it's not something to come given the Patriots game tomorrow night with two powerhouses going at it with the Packers and the Patriots. But it seems like it's going to be it felt like it was one of those games when we were watching it tonight where it just came down to, you know, like you referenced earlier, who had the ball last, who had the last ability to make a good shot. And, you know, Oladipo really turned it on third, fourth quarter and really kind of hit those big shots when he had to. I really thought the game was flying the C's way tonight, especially with Kyrie draining that three with a minute to go and then following it up with another three with 37 seconds to go. But it just turned out it wasn't. My biggest takeaway from the loss, I guess, is another stepping stone, not getting too deep into it. It's still an early November game. Pacers looked good. Celtics looked as good. And I'm sure over the course of the hour, we'll dig into a few of the other takeaways that both of us had, player specific and all.
Yeah. And I think when you look at specific players in this game, obviously coming down the stretch, everybody's going to look at Kyrie versus Oladipo. Oladipo puts up 24 points, 3 assists, 3 steals, you know, 12 rebounds. He has a very good night. 24 and 12 from your two guard is a solid night. And then you look at Kyrie. You know, he has 18 points, 3 assists, 6 rebounds. He's a plus 8. So you look at those two guys, they're the best players in the, you know, if you want to talk about Tatum, I know there's been a lot of buzz. I don't believe that. I think Kyrie Irving is the best player on the Celtics, and I think Victor Oladipo was easily the best player on the Pacers. So obviously a lot of the attention is going to be thrown on those two guys because of how they performed down the stretch. They both hit big shots down the stretch. Oladipo hit the biggest shot down the stretch. But this game wasn't a story of Kyrie Irving versus Victor Oladipo. Kyrie Irving had three shots at halftime. This game was a story of Marcus Morris for the Celtics through three quarters. And then, on the other side, Domantas Sabonis and Tyreke Evans, they played extremely well in the third quarter, the beginning of the fourth quarter, and they kept the Pacers in this game in you know, put them in a position to keep that, hold on to that lead and ultimately win this game. If you look at Evans, he finished the game with 17 points. Sabonis finished with 12. And they just played exactly like they were supposed to. And having two guys that can come off the bench like that, and Evans got scorching hot. You know, he's not always like that, but he turned into a much better jump shooter the last two or three seasons. And then Sabonis just doing what he does, and pulling rebounds and passing from the post. They did exactly what they were supposed to, and the Celtics struggled to contain them for the majority of the third and fourth quarter. So I think that obviously Oladipo and Irving are going to get a lot of the attention because, you know, those are the two flashy guards up top. They're supposed to be the scorers. They're supposed to be the best players. But Sabonis and Evans, they hurt the Celtics tonight. And, you know, I don't think that says anything about the future of the Celtics or the Celtics defense. Their defensive rating so far this season has been 98. The Pacers only scored 102. I'm not too worried about it, but I think those two guys deserve a lot of credit for the Pacers pulling out this W.
I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, just watching the way Tyreke Evans got hot at the right time in the back half of that game, it was, you know, he was the answer to Marcus Morris on a career night for Morris with 23 points. You kind of thought he was going to be the storyline if we got the W, but, you know, Tyreke Evans just really played super on point the most of the third and the fourth, as well as Sabonis, I had no idea he was going to drop 12. I just didn't think he had it in his game. He's more of, like you said, he's a rebound ripper. I just didn't know he's going to find his shot that way. And listening to the broadcast with Mike and Scal tonight, they both kept talking about how, you know, he's a pass first guy, but he's also a good shooter, and he took his opportunities when the defense dropped off him and gave him a bit of a window, and he took them. And I, you know, those two became the story for the Pacers. To your point, I don't think it was the big Kyrie Oladipo matchup that we were hyping. I think it turned into, you know, the Evans and Sabonis show, the tail end of that game. It really helped them pull it out. What were your thoughts on that?
I thought they played extremely well together. I know that a lot of Celtics fans, you know, depending on the money, were interested in bringing Tyreke to Boston this winter. I was one of them. Yeah. If they could get him, you know, for a reasonable contract, and it didn't mean, you know, telling Marcus Smart to kick rocks. Obviously, it didn't work out. I think Tyreke is in a much better position for himself in Indiana, and
for sure.
As I alluded to earlier, I think Indiana has the chance to be one of the better teams in the Eastern Conference. The way they're constructed, the way their starters play together, and the way their bench plays together, I think they are easily, obviously they were last year, but I think they're easily one of the four or five best teams in the Eastern Conference this year. And I wouldn't be surprised if they slide into, you know, a three seed behind Boston and Toronto if Philly falters or Milwaukee falters. It wouldn't surprise me. I don't foresee it, and I don't predict it, but it wouldn't surprise me at all. So I think what you're looking at tonight is just a case of two good teams playing against each other. Celtics are on a four-game win streak. You know, they've been playing really well after a relatively shaky start. And you're not going to win every game. It just doesn't happen like that in the NBA. It was a tough one. You know, like you said earlier, for a lot of the fourth quarter, at least on the stretch run, it felt like a Celtics win. It felt like a game from last year where someone gets hot in the fourth, they make a defensive play down the stretch, and the Celtics pull out a W. They had the guy get hot in the fourth, Kyrie Irving. Marcus Smart made, you know, one – Not necessarily a play, but a ball was flying out of bounds, and him and Oladipo were chasing it down. All of a sudden, he pulls his hands back at the last second. Oladipo tries to slap it into Smart, misses, goes out of bounds, Celtics ball. That felt like another one of those, okay, Marcus Smart made a play, Kyrie's hitting shots, this is the Celtics win, this is locked up. And then the unfortunate happened. Kyrie misses a relatively easy layup on the left block. I bet you he's kicking himself about that. And then Oladipo just does what Oladipo does. I think he blossomed last year. You know, he spent that 1 year in Oklahoma City alongside Russ. And I don't think that was a failed experiment. I just think it's hard for a two-guard to flourish when you have such a ball-dominant point guard like Russell Westbrook. But you've got a guy who's a legitimate all-star, one of, in my opinion, a top 15 player in the NBA. And he's going to hit shots down the stretch. He's going to put up 24 points. That's just what he does. And, you know, he's going to have fourth quarters like this where he just plays well. So, as I mentioned earlier, I don't think there's anything you can really look at and pinpoint as the reason the Celtics lost this game. It's just a disappointing loss, especially because it felt like the Celtics were going to win down the stretch. But that's what happens. That's just what happens in the NBA sometimes.
No, I couldn't. You nailed it right there. I mean, when I look at the game, I'm looking at my notes. I'm going over the text that you and I had during the game and then our talk prior, and just looking for anything to kind of really pick out and figure out, like, hey, was this a key? Did I see this earlier in the game? And I got to be honest with you, I didn't. The one point I do want to make sure that I mentioned to anybody listening that heard my last broadcast with you, Taylor, is I was really hard on Jaylen Brown. At the time, I don't think we knew his foot was bothering him. Maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. He just looked disengaged a few games ago, the last time you and I were on the air together. And so tonight, obviously, I'm Hawkeyeing him. I've been Hawkeyeing him since that game as well. Then we had the injury. We had Semi Ojeleye start last game. And then here I am, pregame, I hear Jaylen Brown starting. I'm like, great, get to watch this guy. I want to see how he does. Man, I must have seen a total one-off game when I saw the last one that you and I called post-game, because Jaylen Brown looked like the Jaylen Brown I know, love, and enjoy watching tonight. He was hitting clutch threes. I mean, he hit a clutch three with 2 minutes to go in the game. And, you know, granted, they lost 101-102. But at the end of the day, seeing him not afraid first half, going into the paint, finishing at the rim, bouncing out. I mean, the spacing tonight was really good, but his play – really kind of, he elevated his game, even injured. I was totally taken back by that. Did you get any notes on him tonight?
Yeah, I pay attention to Jaylen quite a bit because I think, unlike a lot of Celtics fans, he's still my number one young guy. I don't think he's the best. I think Tatum is a more talented offensive player. But, like, I didn't get necessarily the new toy syndrome that a lot of fans did last year where, you know, Tatum became that guy for everybody. So it's kind of, you know, like,
right,
forget about Jaylen a little bit. Jaylen's one of my favorite players in the NBA. You know, he's right up there with Kyrie and LeBron for me. I'm not in terms of talent, just in terms of, you know, my favorite players. And if you look at the stats tonight, like, nothing about what Brown did blows you away. You
know,
12.7 boards, that's a good night. But if you look at everything else, he had no assists, no steals, a couple blocks. But he finished as a minus 12, 1 for 5 from 3, 5 for 14 from the field. And then he only attempted 2 free throws, hit one of them. But the thing is, like, there's more to it than the box score with Jaylen, because – he is in a place this year where last season he had so much bigger of an opportunity because of the Gordon Hayward injury. This year he's dealing with pretty much what the Celtics have right now is three small forwards in the starting five: Jaylen Brown, Gordon Hayward, and Jason Tatum. And obviously Jaylen plays more of the two guard at this point, but you're dealing with three guys with very, not similar skill sets, but similar builds, similar length, and they fill up a lot of the same spaces on the floor. So you're looking at a guy who is just going to, because he's 21 years old and, you know, he's had to adapt to a new role every season of his career so far. He's just adapting to, you know, whatever's thrown at him. And tonight I thought he took a big step. He didn't force anything. He wasn't frustrated. He's a guy who's visibly frustrated on the floor sometimes, but he didn't look frustrated. You know, he took what the Pacers gave him. One time, I think it was Corey Joseph came up on him, tried to guard him at the three-point line. Jaylen hit him with a little jab step up fake and then just drove by him. Instead of taking that contested three, he slowed everything down, did what he was supposed to, got to the rim. And he did that multiple times tonight. And like you said, he hit that big three down the stretch. You know, Kyrie cuts through the lane, passes to Tatum. Tatum drives the defender, you know, makes the extra pass to the corner and knocks it down. That's what he does. He shot 40% from. So I think it's a good point you made about, you know, coming into this game Hawkeyeing him, because he's supposed to be a focal point of this team. He's supposed to be one of the five best players. And, you know, in my opinion, he can be, you know, the third best player behind Kyrie and Tatum, and he should be the third best player. And I think tonight was a step in the right direction for him.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he had 31 minutes on the floor too. So even on that sore foot, he still was in there for 31 minutes. And I thought he did, you know, like you said, his box score doesn't really highlight the game, but my eyeballs don't lie to me. And I just saw a more engaged player, which, you know, ultimately, whether you're an analyst or a fan, that's what you want. You want your players engaged. And I thought he really, really was. I thought another player that I saw take a positive step forward was Gordon Hayward. I think he was in there for like 24, 25 minutes, not a ton of points, but definitely starting to see him get more mixed in. And that's something that I think you and I talked about on our last broadcast too, was we wanted to see how this season, as it progressed, how is Hayward going to get mixed in with a group of five that primarily played without him last year? And I'm starting to see those inroads. There was an alley-oop pass, I want to say, it wasn't Kyrie that threw it to him.
Rozier threw it.
Yeah. That alley-oop was great. And I mean, Scal and Mike couldn't talk enough about how he was mid forearm above the rim. And, you know, he's an elbow above the rim guy when he's super healthy. But I saw a little more engagement into the offense, a little more engagement into the flow. Did you get any takeaways from him on that?
Yeah. And I think you hit a lot of points. You know, I hit the nail right on the head. Gordon Hayward is a guy who he was an all-star his last season in Utah. He's a tremendously talented player. He's a max contract guy. He's, you know, a 6'8", you know, super athletic forward, and he's supposed to play a certain way. But he's also got so many intricate skills. He's such a good passer. He's a good ball handler. He's a smart player. He's a smart defender. He's a good defender. And I think you see more and more of that every game. There's obviously been tentative moments this season. There's tentative moments tonight. But you're not seeing them as much as you were in game one or game two. Now you've got a guy who he's running down the right side of the floor. He looked at Rozier, and Rozier is a notorious bad lob thrower. But Hayward still, you know, puts the finger up and says, hey, put it up there and I'll go get it for you. And he went up and get it, dunks the ball, came down on one leg, and he was fine. You know, I didn't have – a lot of people on Twitter were like, oh, my God, you know, it's so scary to see him do it. I don't have any – you know, I didn't feel anything. I was like, that's the Gordon Hayward that I expected to see. Obviously, there's some nerves, and I'm sure there were nerves for him. But that's the Hayward I expect to see, and that's the Hayward I expect to keep growing and becoming – you know, a bigger focal point for this team on offense and defense, because he's an all-star. That's what they signed him to be. They signed him to be one of the big three with Kyrie and Al Horford, and that's who he's expected to be, and that's who I expect him to be. And I, you know, just thinking about that alley-oop, and not because I want to be negative because of the loss, but just something to look at. I think a guy that's having some trouble adapting to a new role this season is Terry Rozier. If you look at his stats tonight, he has 7 points and 6 boards, 3 assists. He's a -9, 2 for 5 from the field, 2 for 4 from three. Only played 19 minutes. Last year, when the Celtics played in Indiana, everybody remembers the play where, you know, they try an inbound, Indiana tries an inbound pass at the end of the game. Rozier goes up, intercepts it, dunks it for the win. And, you know, the entire second half of last season was the Terry Rozier show, you know, scary Terry. I think Rozier, more so than Brown, like we talked about, is a guy who is having trouble adapting to this role, because he went from being the starting point guard on the second best team in the Eastern Conference to getting 19 minutes in a game against one of the better Eastern Conference teams. What are your thoughts on Rozier's role and just how he's been adapting to it this season and more importantly tonight?
Well, I'll start with tonight and just tell you it was the quietest 18 minutes I've ever seen from him. It just... there was no flair. I basically, he was a non-factor in tonight's game. And so that leads into your contention that he's struggling with his role this year versus last. And I can't argue with that. I mean, I'd love to be a contrarian on this, but you're right. I mean, I've watched every single game so far this season, all the preseason, and I see flashes, but I don't see the guy. And he's got to find that, because this team needs that. They need that in every second teamer's position that gets on that floor has to be that spark plug. Because at any given time, they could be the only second teamer in at the time. So they have to bring that spark. Morris brings that spark with his shot and with his presence out there. You see that with Baines. You see, you know, you're used to seeing that with Rozier. You see it with Smart. You know, these are guys that they're known for their energy. They're known for how they just bring the team up. And Terry's been, you know, to your point, struggling. I think, I don't know if it's struggling in the role, struggling with, you know, thinking about what the next step is down the line. I'm not 100% sure. I'd like to think it's just the role and that'll ease itself out as the season goes on. But yeah, non-existent 18 minutes tonight, 7 points, 2 for 5 on the floor, from the floor. Just wasn't a great feel. Like there was no takeaway. There was no Terry Rozier note in my notebook tonight.
Right.
And that's disheartening.
It's disheartening, but I'm not sure who to blame for it, because he's not being presented with the opportunity he was, because we saw it last season. He capitalized on every opportunity he was given last season. And I think it's always hard when a guy really flourishes, whether it's because of injury or because they just beat the starter out. But I think when a guy gets thrown a bigger role in big situations and plays well in them, and then is forced to go back to his former role, I think that's always difficult for any player of any caliber. And you're really seeing it with Rozier. Earlier in the season, I talked about how he can get into that scary Terry mode with, you know, a big defensive play or, you know, whatever, just a hustle play, just, you know, a couple threes down the stretch, and not need to have the ball in his hands and not need to be, you know, the scary Terry of old, but the scary Terry of new. And I just think he's struggling to find that lane right now. And it's really unfortunate because Rozier, in my opinion, is the second best guard on the team. If you're counting Brown as a forward, obviously if he's a guard, then, you know, I think Brown's the second best guard. But it's just tough because Rozier is in a spot right now where he's expected to be the same player, at least by fans, as last season, but isn't given the same opportunity. So he, you know, and it doesn't look like he's forcing anything. It doesn't look like he's, you know, struggling to do anything, you know, he would have last year. I just think it's a minute thing and it's an opportunity thing.
Yeah, well, I mean, when I look at the breakdown on minutes, Kyrie had 27, Rozier had 18. I mean, it's a nine-minute differential, but over the course of the game, you know, I don't know. I guess I want more. And to your point, I'm an unabashed fan, so I do want to see that energy level from him.
Right.
But as an analyst in a backseat position, you know, I see the struggle. You know, I see obviously not being able to find that flow or that rhythm within the game, and needing more minutes to do that. And you know, I'm sure there's going to be ample opportunity down the line. It's just will he jump on that when he gets that opportunity? You know, it's not going to be every night that Marcus Smart's dropping 23 minutes and Kyrie's at 27. So there's going to be an opportunity for Rozier. It's just what does he do when he gets that opportunity? And I guess I'm holding out hope as a fan that I see the Terry from last year. But I don't know at this point. I'm still kind of in the fog on him.
Right, and I've got a couple more thoughts on Rozier, but before I give you guys those, I do want to just take a quick break to tell you guys about Boston Barber and Tattoo Company.
Every neighborhood has a heartbeat, a place that represents what being home is all about. In Boston's historic North End, that place is Boston Barber and Tattoo Company. Boston Barber and Tattoo Company has become home to A-list celebrities like Gordon Hayward, Brad Marchand, Milan Lucic, Aaron Baines, and the list goes on over the years. It's more than just Boston's most well-known corner barbershop. It's a spot to catch up while getting lined up. And it's also a tourist attraction for the hundreds of thousands of people that visit the North End throughout the year. Boston Barber and Tattoo Company, a North End landmark that represents the epicenter of the neighborhood at its core, located at 113 Salem Street.
I just want to thank Boston Barber and Tattoo Company for sponsoring the show. And I also want to remind the listeners that you can call in tonight to speak with Joe and I about, you know, whatever happened in the game, whatever your thoughts on the Celtics season are, you know, anything Celtics related that you want to talk about, call in at 347-215-7771. Again, that's 347-215-7771. We're here until 10:30, so give us a call and we'll chop it up about the Celtics. You know, I'll end my Rozier thoughts on this. And I think that it'll eventually change throughout the season. But I think that if this is continuing, this trend continues, I think that you're going to be seeing a guy who might be a trade candidate. As much as that hurts me to say, I think if Rozier is only getting 19 minutes a game and he's sitting at his current average of 7 points a game, I think there's too much value in what he could bring back to this team to just sit him on the bench for the rest of the season and hope that he, you know, turns up in the playoffs or something like that. I think if we get to the trade deadline, the Celtics, you know, have a glaring, you know, weakness somewhere. I think they think about moving Rozier. And obviously that's been a point of contention for years. Danny Ainge doesn't want to trade Rozier. He's made that very known. And I think that if Rozier is with the Celtics come next offseason, they'll try to do everything they can to re-sign him. It'll be tough because Kyrie's up. You have to think about the future with Brown and Tatum and even Hayward and Horford a few years down the line. So you have to think about us, especially after they give Smart that deal. But I think that if Terry continues to not necessarily struggle, but have trouble adapting to this new role, I think the rumblings about moving him, and I think the fan demand for moving him, you know, I think that chatter starts. Joe, you there?
Yeah, sorry, just cut out for a second. On to Rozier, you know, final thoughts, like you said. I pulled up his stats just, you know, to have him in front of me, and I'm looking at, you know, last year's stats versus career stats. And oddly enough, his minutes per game this season are 22.8, career stats 19. Field goal percentage this year, 37.3, career 37.6. You know, I keep going down this line, and we're not talking about a huge dip this year, and actually a bump this year with less minutes. But overall, I think my fear is, get to the trade deadline, what do you do? If his numbers are dropping and his minutes have dropped, what's his trade value at that point? You know, what is the get in return for the give? And that might be the holdback for Danny come trade time, is if Rozier's still struggling here, I'm not sure his value on the open market to another team when all they have really to go on is this year is going to be all that high in regards to what you're going to get in return. I'm not sure you get player for player, quality for quality. That's where I would hold back if I was Danny on that list.
I think that's a good point. But if you look at a lot of the guys who get, you know, second and third opportunities in the NBA based on nothing, you know,
reps.
Looking at Rozier, you're looking at Rozier, a guy who had I'd call it almost dominant second half last season. He turned into a guy that, you know, could demand $18 to $20 million in the open market, you know, come free agency. But that's enough of the Rozier trade talk. I don't like talking about it because it hurts my heart because I love Terry. And, you know, I just don't want to get bogged down after, you know, a couple games in the season. We do have a couple callers lined up, so we'll get to the call lines right now. Before we do, just a reminder that it's the number is 347-215-7771. 347-215-7771. Joe and I will be here till 10:30, so I'll call in. Let's hit the call lines, and 347, what do you got?
Hey, guys. I thought tonight was a really just bad loss for the team. You know, when you look at the standings, you see Toronto and Milwaukee tearing it up. You know, Golden State's doing their thing, and everyone's saying the Celtics are the second-best team in the league. So, you know, I thought tonight was like one of those kind of games the Celtics had, you know, it's not that they had to win it, but it's the kind of thing that a team that's expected to get to the finals needs to win and should win. And I thought it was a frustrating game. I thought, you know, Kyrie missing that layup was bad. I thought that play at the end of the game where Gordon Hayward threw it away was atrocious. I'm not sure what Brad Stevens was doing. I don't know if Gordon was just ad-libbing because he saw no one else. But the Celtics have had a lot of problems closing out teams in the last 5 minutes of games. I mean, you saw that against the Knicks a couple weeks ago. You saw that against Detroit. You saw that against Milwaukee. Celtics are keeping teams around late in games, and they're not able to finish. And to me, it's a real concern. And if this team wants to actually compete for a championship, they got to play a lot better. They have to play better, particularly late in games, and they're not doing it. And, you know, Pacers are good. And, again, Oladipo killed the Celtics last year, and the Celtics had no plan for him again. I mean, could we double-team the guy a couple times? Could we try to shut this guy down a little bit, get the ball out of his hands, make someone else take a big shot? Apparently not. Apparently Stevens is like, let the guy just stick a dagger in us every damn game. So that's all I'm going to say. As far as Rozier and Irving, Celtics have a huge decision to make. Do we give Irving a max, or what's going on? Clearly Terry wants to be a starter. I don't know what to do about that. And that's going to be Ainge's nightmare all year. And that's all I have to say about tonight. Thanks, guys. Good work.
Yeah. Thank you for the call. I think the caller made an interesting point with, first of all, I think the final play of the game, I think that's a play the Celtics run a lot. I don't think Hayward was ad-libbing at all. The Celtics a lot of the time will run a bunch of screens on the baseline and up top and then try to get that guy roll into the bucket. They ran it, I think, game 4 or 5 against Philly last year in the playoffs. Yep. They ran it for Al Horford. So, you know, I don't think that's an ad-lib. And even though Oladipo put up 24 and he played well last year, it didn't feel to me that he really killed the Celtics. So I disagree there, but I do think there is an interesting point to be made about the last 5 minutes, because if you're asking me, Kyrie Irving is the closer on this team. But when you have so many mouths to feed, I think the ball gets spread sometimes a little too much and you kind of forget who's who. That wasn't the case tonight, I don't think, but I think it has happened other times in this season so far. You know, Kyrie took the shots tonight, but I think when you have so many mouths to feed, and you have so many, you know, high caliber players, you struggle to figure out who's supposed to be the one taking those shots down the stretch.
Hmm. Yeah, I had a different take on it. And again, to the caller's point regarding closing out teams in the final minutes of a game, that is a concern. I mean, because if you think about it, Indiana's on the back half of a back-to-back. They're not supposed to be sticking around tail end of the fourth quarter. You know what I mean? This is when we
right.
step on throats. This is when we pump the gas. And I didn't get that feel per se. You know, to your point, Kyrie did everything Kyrie's supposed to do in the final 2 minutes of a game. Jaylen Brown did what he's supposed to do. I mean, Al was flying around back half of that fourth quarter. So I'm a little concerned that they didn't close out. Do I think it's a sign of things to come? No. I mean, again, I'm tempering my thoughts with it's November 3rd. You know
right.
what I mean? We just closed out October. We're early. This is still the feel out feel, you know, talk to me mid-January. If we're still not closing out, this is a big deal, but right now, yeah, it's something I'll definitely be keeping my eye on. And then when it comes to Oladipo, I mean, to your point, Taylor, he was in the game first half, but he wasn't really a factor. He was more decoy than anything the first half of that game. It was second half that he really kind of brought his level of play up and became something that, you know, you got to keep an eye on. He became Oladipo of the known kind. I don't know. I don't know that we didn't pay enough attention to, or the Celtics didn't pay enough attention to him. I just think that he got scorching hot. Kyrie was scorching hot. They were matching buckets. You had Morris doing what he's supposed to do. He had a career high 23. It just happened to be one of those games where they just didn't close when they needed to close.
Right.
That big stop didn't
and
happen.
That
I guess
happened.
That's the way.
And if you look at the first quarter, you know, they hit one or two or three of those first 9 three pointers that they missed. They win this game. So I think it's all
right.
a matter of perspective. You know what I mean?
Oh, for sure.
Right. All right. Head back to the call lines, number 347-215-7771. 413, what do you got for us? 413? Ready? We'll try
Thanks
that.
Thanks for listening.
Again? Yeah. 757. 757, you there? Oh, 757 dropped. All right, Joe. Looks like it's back to just me and you.
All right.
I think that you and I have mentioned the name a bunch of times tonight, but someone that gets overlooked because of the loss, because of the result, is going to be Marcus Morris. And tonight he put up 23 points, 6 rebounds, only 1 assist, but he's not an assist guy. You know, 9 for 13 from the field,
no.
4 for 6 from 3, hit his 1 free throw. This season has been a big season for Marcus Morris. Obviously, he's in a contract year. But he is playing basketball like I've never seen Marcus Morris play basketball. Last year, we'd have these flashes of really good defense, you know, doing the right thing, Marcus Morris. But then you'd have a couple ISO Marcus possessions where he tries to take on a defender for, you know, he dribbles the air out of the ball, and then he pulls up some, you know, long two that no one ever wants. We don't see much of that at all this year. I mean, in fact, tonight he was backing a guy down on the low block. Saw, I think it was Tatum came open up top and immediately passed out of it. Last year, ISO move does not pass out of that. And I think that Marcus Smart has been huge for the Celtics this year, and he's been arguably their best bench player, or maybe inarguably. He's averaging 14-7 at the bench, and he's huge for this team that has, you know, legitimate title aspirations. You need that guy off the bench to be those automatic points, that spark plug. Obviously, you want Smart and Rozier to be that spark plug. But if you can get it from Morris, that's great too. What are your thoughts on Morris's performance tonight? Obviously, it was a big one, but also just how he's been playing this entire season.
So the last 3 games specifically, I've been watching him, because my big criticism last year with him, there were two. It was a two-parter. First part was no pass Morris. That was my nickname for him on the couch watching every game. The second he touched the ball, it didn't really matter. He was shooting. And to your point, sometimes they were no man's land twos. They were highly contested threes. It was going into a 3-man paint to try to lay up off a finger roll. I mean, they weren't high percentage shots for him. However, this year, the player I'm seeing has either bought into the unselfish play or has realized that he's on the court with, you know, arguably 2.5 Hall of Famers, future Hall of Famers. He just exudes confidence in his game right now. That's one of the things I just I can't really harp on hard enough is that he's playing with a level of confidence that I haven't seen him play with before. And because he has the reputation of a shoot first player, he gets the tight coverage. He does a head fake, or if he balls out, he's balling out to somebody who's free. And that aspect of his game opens up his offense down the line, because then they have to respect the pass. They leave him open and he drains. I mean, if there's a, I think he's only second on the team confidence wise when he shoots to Kyrie. When Kyrie shoots, he knows it's going in. More often than not, he even turns his back to the hoop and starts going back up court. I'm seeing that from Morris too. I'm just seeing confidence in his game, which, you know, can only lead to good things as this continues down the path. Unless, of course, he continues down this path and wants to be a starter. That's going to be a bit of an issue.
Yeah, and but, I mean, obviously that's a risky run with a guy in a contract season. And a lot of people will make a big deal of the contract year. I know that a lot of people do make a big stink over players who play really well in the contract season and, like, you know, oh, they're just trying to get a new deal. You know, it doesn't feel like that. Guys who want that new deal, they go above and beyond to get theirs. Morris is just playing good Celtics basketball right now. Like, he's working to get the good shots that Brad Stevens talks about so much, and he's knocking down the good shots when they come to him. Shooting 50% from the field, 51% from three, and 85% from the line. I mean, that's 50-50, 85%. That's wild for a guy whose career averages are 43% from the field, 36% from three, and 73% from the line.
And his minutes are the same. That's the best part. His minutes are the same, and his numbers are way up.
The way he's playing, last year he was one of those guys who Weird Celtics Twitter really adopted as one of their kind of like cult niche, you know, one of their favorite players. And I think it's because he's a fun character. You know, he'd always get the technical fouls, and he, like, you know, slapped the ref on the ass that one time and then tweeted, like, sorry for smacking the ref at, you know, stuff like that.
Right.
This year he's just doing it on the floor, playing exactly how you want that sixth or seventh guy off the bench to play. Do I expect the 50-50, 85 to keep up? No. But there's nothing to really, you know, deter me from thinking that Morris can keep up this style of play. And if he keeps up this style of play, he's a huge weapon come April and May. No matter where the Celtics end up, obviously, you know, the expectation is they'll end up with the first or second seed in the Eastern Conference. But even if they end up outside there, he's a guy that I trust if, you know, they're in a game five on the road in the playoffs, that he can come in there and knock down open shots and then get his own shot too.
Oh, absolutely. But let me spin this a second, because one of the stats in tonight's game just stuck out to me. I purposely didn't text you while we were watching the game regarding it, and I didn't talk to you in the green room before we went online, because it was something that you and I spent about 10-15 minutes on last time we were on. And if you remember, you were blown away in our last, I think it was the Knicks game, or it might have been a game prior to that, Charlotte. But needless to say, the Celtics had jacked up a bunch of threes in that game, and you were blown away because their season average last year was 27.
Yeah.
Tonight, they finished with 46.
Yeah.
And they had would they have 46 the night before the last game as well?
Milwaukee, 55.
Right. So what do you see this as is this a trend? Is this a blip? Is this a matchup? Is this just the new style of the NBA with the floor spacing? What are your thoughts on it, Taylor? Because you're deep into this kind of stuff, and specifically where you were referencing their per-game average last year, last time we were talking. I just want to know, because they are blowing that average out of the water right now.
I think it's a combination of everything. I think that the way basketball is played in the NBA now, you look at a team like the Golden State Warriors, they space the floor, shoot threes. I think all teams are adapting part of that, and I think the Celtics, because of Brad Stevens, are just better at that. I think the biggest – there's two parts that I think are the biggest proponents of why this is happening. I think the first is that all five players in the starting five, and even if you look at the bench, you got Rozier, Baines, who's capable of knocking down one or two threes a game, and then Morris. Those three guys can shoot threes. Smart will shoot threes. You know, his success varies, you know, from game to game or from week to week or whatever, but we don't have to get into
that. I think he went 1-for-4 tonight.
Oh, of course. But that's like – but a couple nights from now, he'll go, you know, 5-for-6 and hit a big three down the stretch, and it'll seem like he's the, you know, greatest shooter, you know, ever. I think the fact that this entire starting five, they can all shoot, and then you've got three guys on the bench, they can all shoot. you play to your team's strengths, and if your strength is shooting, you shoot. But if you look at the first quarter tonight, when they started off 0 for 9 from 3, it's not like any of those three-pointers were, you know, a Kobe Bryant three-pointer or a James Harden three-pointer where one
of the
guards...
They were all wide open, Taylor.
Yeah, they're all wide open, and there's no sense in not taking wide open shots. Like, regardless if you're missing them, you've got a team full of good enough shooters that, whether it's law of averages, you just believe in good shooters, they're going to start falling at some point. And for the Celtics, they did start falling tonight. They shot better from three than Indiana did. But I just think it's a combination that you've got a bunch of good shooters, and then the shots are open because everyone on the team can handle the ball and pass the ball. And you've got the coaching of Brad. So, like, the floor is so well spaced that all these guys are wide open. And they were front-rimming a lot tonight, which I think is obviously fixable. But I think it's just a combination of those two things. You've got shooters and floor spacing and coaching, and a coach that preaches take good shots, and if they're wide open, they're good shots.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. My notes, I'm flipping through them while you're talking here, and my notes from the first quarter, first 0 for 9 from 3, all wide open / uncontested. Great ball movement, but no hoop.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you, from an NBA fan perspective, you know, one of the things that as much as I try to be a contrarian, sometimes I do have to point out the positives. From an NBA's fan's perspective, if you take the Celtics and the Pacers out of this, we watched a game that had 15 lead changes, 9 ties. I mean, from an entertainment value perspective, it was a fun game to watch tonight. I mean, we were on the crap end of the stick at the end. However, I'll tell you, if games could be that interesting all the way across, and I travel a ton for business. I know we've talked about this. In fact, earlier this week, I was in San Francisco. So I was listening to sports radio out there, and I'm listening to them talk, Warriors talk, left and right. And it was right after Thompson broke the record for threes. And one of the things that struck me was that's really their entire game story on the radio out there was it was all about breaking the record. It had nothing to do with, you know, other players on the floor. It had nothing to do with scheme. It had nothing to do with plays. It had nothing to do with it being a close game or a good game. It was all just, you know, oh yeah, Thompson's dropping threes like they're raindrops coming in and hitting a bucket. But one of the things I really appreciated about tonight's game was the 15 lead changes, 9 ties. I mean, it kept the viewer, kept the casual fan and the analyst engaged, which, you know, I like those games.
I do too. I think coming into the season, everyone just penciled in the Celtics as the number one team in the East, you know, said they were going to win 60 plus games. It'd be a cakewalk.
Sure.
People were talking before the season. It's like, you know, how is Brad going to integrate Hayward into the offense and defense, but still rest everybody because the playoffs are the only thing that matters. And games like tonight show you that even though the Eastern Conference has, you know, it's been a steady stream of players out of the East and into the West, and the Western Conference is obviously the superior conference, you've still got some good teams. I think if you look at the game versus Milwaukee on Thursday, that's a good game. Game versus Toronto the first week of the season, you know, incredible, almost playoff-like game. And the game tonight, like you said, bunch of lead changes, bunch of ties. So these games are exciting, and they show you that even though the Celtics should be the best team in the Eastern Conference and are probably the most talented team, it's not going to be a cakewalk to the NBA Finals. These other teams are talented too, and they're hungry. Kyrie just had a quote, and he said, every time we go into a stadium and are going to an arena and the other team beats us, their fans celebrate like it's a championship. And that's what happens when you're supposed to be the best team in the best team in your conference and the second best team in the NBA, like the caller said earlier. That's what's going to happen, and that's what's going to make games all season long exciting. Obviously, you'll have your stinkers where the Celtics will go to Sacramento and it starts at 10:30 at night, and you know they beat the Kings by 30, and it'll be tough.
Right.
But games like tonight are what makes it worth it.
And it's what preps them as the season goes along for these games when they actually are, you know, down the stretch. You're fighting for either a position in the playoffs or you're fighting for the a round win. I think the fans in Indy tonight were celebrating as hardcore as they was because it was the return of Gordon Hayward. It was, I think, his 9th game back, but still, first game in a Celtics uniform. And then on top of that, the last 4 times these teams have met, the road teams won each time. I thought that was a neat stat to pull out from tonight's game. So Indy winning at home, I'm sure, was a big deal for the crowd there in Indy. But I think it's a good learning loss, I guess, is the best way to put it. I mean, game as a whole, you had a nice tight game. They played it tight. and then you see how it plays out as the game goes on. And, you know, you get better as you look at the tape, you figure out where the missteps were. I'm going to guess some of them, like you and I were joking about earlier, were in the 0-for-9 from three land and start the game. But
right
to your point, you make one of those buckets and it plays out a little bit different down the end, I think.
Exactly. And I think looking at stuff like that makes me more optimistic about these kinds of losses than I am about bad losses or even, you know, ugly wins or wins. But some of them, you see some of the issues and you almost look at those more and you're like, all right, that seems like a problem. Games like tonight, it's just, you know, like eventually wide open shots will start to fall for the team who's got a starting five full of 40% three-point shooters. Like, that's going
Absolutely.
To happen. There were no issues tonight that were super glaring to me and you know, scare me in terms of the future. So, like I said, it's early in the season. I don't want to put too much stock into a loss, even though there were things that were, you know, disappointing. I think the loss overall was disappointing. One thing I want to talk about, I talked about it with Jack Michael a couple weeks ago after the Toronto game. Kyrie Irving has been torn apart a lot for his defensive effort. Obviously, he's praised on the offensive end. Tonight, he's praised on the offensive end. Even though he only puts up 18 points, hits a couple big shots down the stretch. After, I can't remember which game it was after. I think it was his 31-point game against maybe Detroit a couple weeks ago. He said that Tommy Heinsohn told him he was out of shape and that he wasn't playing hard on both ends. And since then, it really looks like he's been going all out on both ends of the floor. Saw a bunch of tweets about it tonight. Even casual fans were talking about it like, oh, wow, Kyrie's really going hard on the defensive end. He just was talking about Bojan Bogdanović saying that the reason he got into foul trouble early is that he was guarding Bogdanović in the post a little bit wrong. He's treating him like a post-up threat when he's not necessarily a post-up threat. I think Kyrie Irving is playing, in, like you said earlier, it's 8 games in the season, 9 games in the season. I don't want to overreact. To me, Kyrie is playing an entirely different brand of defense this year than I've ever seen him play in the past. Last year, I thought he was engaged, but got away with some stuff, whether that's because his knee or whatever. I think he got away with some laziness because of how good the defense was last year. This year, it seems like, especially after the Heinsohn comments, he's taking it upon himself to show that he's not some sieve on defense, and that even though he's not the best defender in the world, and he's probably a negative defender, he's still going to put it all on the line. Tonight, he was diving for loose balls, which I don't love to see. But I think that shows such a different level of commitment to the more than we've seen from him in the past.
Absolutely. I made a note of it in the first quarter. Even though they were ice cold from beyond the arc, Tatum and Kyrie showing strong D early, diving for loose 50-50 plays. That and his quick hands, too. I mean, Oladipo underneath the hoop kind of sort of faked him out a little bit, and then as soon as he showed the ball, you saw Kyrie's hand come in and knock it away. I mean, I think he's playing, to your point, a different brand of defense, a little more engaged, a little more physical, I guess, for his position on the court. And yeah, but Bogdanović really kind of owned him in that first quarter, getting him into some severe foul trouble. I mean, I made a note at halftime that I was nervous about this because at the end of the half, Gordon had 3, Kyrie had 3, and Baines had 3. That's not a good sign going into halftime. You know, you'd like to see them 1-2 tops. And he was playing hard. I definitely got that from him. I just think he's one of those players that they're sneaky fast, if that makes sense. His hands are sneaky fast. Very much like Rajon Rondo was when he was part of the championship run. He had really good long reach fingers, could get in there and knock a ball loose when he needed to. And I see Kyrie able to do that as well. It's part of his repertoire.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. A stat that, you know, came across, you know, quote unquote, came across my desk tonight was that Kyrie is leading the Celtics, who currently have the best defense in the NBA in deflections with 2.2 a game. You know,
nice.
And I think that speaks to exactly what you were saying, that he's got those quick hands and that when guys try to throw those little passes, you know, through the paint or even up top, he's viable to just poke one out and, you know, steal the ball. And I think I mentioned this to Jack Michael a couple weeks ago. I think that if Kyrie can play the quarterback role on defense, which doesn't make a ton of sense, but I think it makes enough sense. If he can play that quarterback role on defense that Steph Curry plays, where he's real vocal, make sure he knows where all the switches on screens are and just stays attentive to whoever he's guarding, I think that he can prove to be an effective defender without being a good defender, if that makes sense.
Totally. I mean, yeah, I like the analogy of quarterback and the defense, but it does make sense, you know, because you're running the point. It's got to kind of funnel through you. You know what I mean? So whether it's offense or defense, he's setting a tone. You know what I mean? He's allowing the others to do their thing while still making time to get his own, you know, his own defense in there. I think he's going to be fine. He's a great all around player. That's one of the things I like about Kyrie the most is that, you know, specifically with the uptick in his defense, he's such a complete player. I mean, he can beat you so many different ways. And he just has that stone cold killer look about him where he's just happy to do that. You know, it doesn't matter to him if he, you know, if he goes 0-for on the floor for the night, if he has a great defensive night, to him, it's a win. And vice versa, you know, if he has a night where he's not necessarily on top of his game on defense, he'll beat you with the throwdown and make it happen. He's just such a complete player, and his floor vision is, it's incredible. One of my favorite players in the league by far. I mean, I put him in my top five easy.
Absolutely. And I think that floor vision comes in handy in, you know, to the point that I made a little bit earlier, being an effective defender without being the best defender. There was one play tonight where I think it was maybe Corey Joseph. It was a guard for the Pacers. He kind of was on a transition fast, depending on, and Kyrie was out in front of him. And a lot of times those guards that are out in front of the ball handler in transition, they get mixed up and they end up in the completely wrong spot. They end up, way towards the three-point line because they think there's going to be a kick out. Right. Kyrie tonight, he saw Jaylen Brown trailing the ball handler, and Kyrie just did enough where he kind of just, you know, messes with the guy, stays in front of him. He's kind of, you know, swinging his hips, like pivoting all around, but stays in front of the guy long enough for Jaylen Brown to track the guy down and block it. I think stuff like that speaks to his floor vision. And as wild as it sounds, it speaks to Tommy Heinsohn holding him accountable and calling him out for not giving it 100% on the defensive end. And, you know, quote unquote, not being in shape, which, you know, whether that's the truth or not, regardless.
I don't think that's the truth. I just think it's great that Tommy's still relevant. You know what I mean? Like, I know he's a legend, but to these athletes today, for him to tell a Kyrie Irving, you know, you're out of shape, I think it's great that they actually appreciate that from him. But, you know, I don't know. It just makes me laugh.
For Kyrie to like take it to heart and like do something about it, I think that speaks a lot about the Celtics organization. You know, just mentioning a couple defensive plays. Jaylen Brown had one play where I think Thaddeus Young tried to back him down the baseline. Jaylen stood strong, you know, and he just blocked the jump hook attempt. Which you don't see because the jump shot is supposed to be over the defender. I thought that was a good play. Tatum missed a baseline jumper, which he should have hit, and I think he was a little bit frustrated. You know, a lot of guys, when they're frustrated on offense, they don't play their best defense. You know, it was one play, I think it was third quarter. You know, he missed that baseline jumper, came down the other end, you know, stay strong defensively, face guards the defender, and, you know, prevents the end pass. And I think that, obviously, that was like a ramble and listing, you know, a list of plays. But it's just like little things like that that are positives I can take from a loss like this. Like the young guys who, you know, they might struggle. Obviously, Jaylen and Tatum had an efficient 14 points and 5 for 11 from the field. He was fine. But the fact that those guys are so willing, like Kyrie has been the last couple games, but the fact that they're so willing to put their bodies, not necessarily on the line, but, you know, risk their bodies to play good defense and all contribute to being the best defense in the NBA, even though they're supposed to be offensive players. I think that speaks a lot to the mentality of the Boston Celtics and just the reason that they're going to be successful. I don't think these losses, you know, are any reason to, you know, to be doom and gloom about this team. I think there's a lot of positives to be taken from them.
No, absolutely. And another thing that I noticed tonight was Brad went 9 deep all the way across. So that was good to see. There was, you know, I think there was only, did anybody? No. So there were only two guys with under 20 minutes throughout the game. So that's excellent. I mean, that's a great way to keep fresh legs out there. I guess I'm trying to think of who didn't play. Was it Semi didn't play?
Shemmy didn't play. Tice is hurt. Yabusele didn't play. And Robert Williams didn't play.
That's right. So I was interested, you know, it's interesting to see Semi get the start, but then not see any minutes on the backside game. But, you know, hey, He did okay in his last game. I'll take what I get, you know. Anytime Brad goes nine deep into the, you know, into overall, I'll take, you know, 8 to 9 guys on the court per game. I'm good with. When we start going 11, 12, you know, that's when it gets a little, I don't know. I think it takes away from the flow of the guys that are out there because you're constantly changing parts. But I thought 9 was a good mix tonight. It was, you know, everybody that was in seemed to contribute and contribute well. And like I said, even, you know, Baines and Rozier were the tail end at 18 and 19 minutes respectively. So I thought he did a good job of getting guys off the bench into the game and giving them some, you know, some actual good minutes to play and kind of find their game. Baines always comes out like a house on fire. I love him. He's a fun player to watch. He was 2 for 3 from 3-point land tonight. I think he was, 2 for 3 from the floor as well. So, you know, he does his thing. I love watching him play. I love the fire he brings. I love the presence he has in the paint. He's just a good player. He had a couple, you know, to quote the aforementioned Tommy, there were a couple ticky-tack fouls on him soon after he got in. But after that, I mean, he just kind of settled in and he's going to be, as long as he stays healthy, I see him being a major part of this push for the season.
Yeah. I mean, I love Aaron Baines. Beginning of last season, I was kind of shaky on him because he would do
I think we were all on the fence.
Yeah. I didn't really know what he brought to the game because he seemed like an unathletic 5 who just kind of stood there. But as you
right.
watch him and realize the intricacies of the way he plays defense and even the way he plays offense, he's incredible. Like, I love watching him. Like you said, I love watching Aaron Baines. And it sounds ridiculous to say that you love watching Aaron Baines play. I mean, if you take a look at him, he looks like Tormund with a man bun. And he's just like a big – he's just like this big, lumbering guy. But I think that because the Celtics don't need him in the starting 5 anymore,
right.
he's going to have fresher legs all season long. So we'll get to see peak Baines all year long as opposed to last year where when Tice goes out, you know, you could just see some of the wear and tear on him. But this year we've got he just seems to be doing it all on offense, on defense. When it comes down to it against, you know, the Giannis's, he's not afraid of Giannis. He's not afraid of Embiid. He's not afraid of anybody. And like tonight he gets frustrated with a couple calls, like you said, and then he just like pulls a corner 3 and hits it. Aaron Baines,
right.
the guy wears number 46, and he's just hitting a corner 3. Like, it doesn't make a lot of sense. But I'll admit, this is the first time I've ever really said it. Like, I love watching Aaron Baines play basketball.
Absolutely. He had 4 blocks in 19 minutes tonight. I mean, he makes the most of his time on the court. And I think, you know, as a fan, I think that's why we appreciate him. As an analyst, that's why we like watching him, because there is something to see. You know what I mean? There isn't – it's to your point, it's not just this lumbering, you know, humble bumble in the paint. It's, you know, he does the dirty work. He does the little things. He clears lanes. He backs out. He boxes out. He does what he has to do. And then to your point, you know, instead of losing his crap over a crappy little foul, he just posts up and drops a 3 on you. You know, that's what he does.
Yeah. It's wild to watch, but I love it. And like,
sure.
obviously the whole joke last year was all of Australia and all that. And in like, he was another guy like Morris who for a long time, I was like, all right, he'll just be a cult hero for a while. But now he's a good NBA basketball player. He's a really good NBA basketball player. And unless you have anything else you want to end on, I think ending on a high note, even though the Celtics lost tonight, I think ending on the high note of Aaron Baines being a good NBA basketball player is a perfect place to end for me, if it's good with you.
I'm down with that. Let's call it.
Beautiful. Celtics go to Indianapolis, lose to the Pacers 102-101. This is the CLNS Celtics post-game show brought to you by Boston Barber and Tattoo. For Taylor McLeod and Joe Choquet, we'll see you next time.
This has been the Celtics post-game show on CLNSradio.com. Thanks for listening. The Celtics might not be in action every day, but we are, so stay connected. Follow us on Twitter at CLNSRadio and check out our broadcast schedule for the best weekly sports podcasts on the web.
here and talk forever. And that's – oh, hang on. Can you hear me? Hello? Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah, I can hear you now. Did you hear what I was saying? My son texted me, goes, I like the Rondo Irving comparison.
Yeah, no, it's a good one. I liked it too. I don't even know if this episode's off right now. Let me try something. This would be great if it's not off.